This is an 8-iron, and it's a dead shank.
Wow.
Way right.
Oh, takes a hop off the path.
You got to be kidding me.
Very tough pitch shot right here. You got to hit it into the hill. One hop up and bite, and it's in.
Kind of like that.
Well, I would like to welcome golf analyst Ron Mintz to the Sub 70 podcast. You can find all of Ron's insights. I follow him on Twitter at Mintz Golf, and that's Mintz with a Z. Ron, it's truly an honor to have you on. Happy New Year to you, and really been looking forward to this conversation.
Thank you, Jason. I appreciate you having me, and Happy New Year to you.
Well, I love your insights into the game of golf. And, you know, how did this come about? You know, what's your background and how did this whole thing happen? Because I know you're doing, you know, 150 appearances a year. I know today you were going back and forth between media stuff. So, you know, you've turned into a bit of a media sensation of everyone wanting to get your thoughts on, I'm guessing, the start of the year and where golf's kind of going in 2021. It's got to be a pretty interesting backstory to kind of get to where you've gotten here.
Well, I started playing golf when I was 5 years old. My dad put a cut down 5-iron in my hands and went out in the backyard. We didn't use wiffle balls. We used the real thing. And he was a lefty. I was a righty. But he had a passion for golf, and he was a pretty good player. So he taught me the game. And in the summer, I remember he would take me to the golf course in the morning, drop me off, come back at 5 o'clock after I played 36 holes and walking. And he played 9 or 18 with me if there was enough daylight. So my whole life was golf until I, became an adult. And I wanted to be a pro. I mean, I could have been a club pro, I'm sure. I had the game, but I wanted to be on tour and tried a couple of mini tour events. And it's just a whole different ball game. And then I developed a hook, which at the time I thought was, I'd always been taught to hit the ball straight. And little did I know that in years to come, if you could draw the ball, you were a damn good golfer. And if you could cut it, you were a good golfer. So I had the shot. I just didn't know it. But long story short, I got married and decided I need to get a real job and provide for my family, which I wanted to have kids. So I was lucky enough to get an industry that was, I didn't think was going away because people need to always eat. So I got in the food business, institutional distributor, and with Kraft Foods and Sysco and some others. Worked in that industry for 30 years and retired as a vice president. And consequently, I got to play in a lot of PGA Tour Pro-Ams that my company paid for, and I take a client with me. And I remember the first one I ever played in was with, I was paired with Paul Azenegger. And, it was, I just love it. So when I retired back in my early 50s, it was, the economy was bad, and I took early retirement. I didn't have anything to do, and I realized you can't really play golf every day, because I tried, and so Twitter was out coming out then. So I got on Twitter, and I couldn't figure it out. I thought, well, this is crazy. I mean, how are you supposed to type something with, well, I think it was 140 characters back then. But I noticed everybody sort of had a niche, like some people were talking about business or recipes. A lot of ladies on there. So I just started posting stuff about golf, golf quotes from Bobby Jones and the legends. And then I started posting stats, and I'd been on there a couple of years, and I wasn't trying to build a following, but I had about 8,000 followers, and I thought, somebody's reading it. And one day I get a direct message from a guy named Hank Haney. I thought it was a joke. I didn't think it was really Hank Haney, because I think at the time he had just split with Tiger, and he asked me to come on his show on the PGA Tour Radio Network. And I said, sure, let me know when. And I didn't hear anything back for about 6 months. And then this person writes again, but this time he's got that little blue check mark out there. And it was Hank Haney. And he said, I still want you on the show. And I said, well, sure, just let me know when. The same answer. He said, well, how about tomorrow? And I freaked out thinking, oh, my gosh, you know. And I wrote him back. I said, Hank, I'm nobody. I mean, how are you even going to introduce me? Because I'm not a writer. I'm just a fan. He said, let me worry about that. He said, by the way, you know more about golf than anybody I've ever met. And I was blown away by it. So I called my son, who's my best friend. And he said, Daddy, what do you got to lose? I said, well, when you put it that way, I guess just a little pride. So I went on November 19th, 2014. I was supposed to be on for 12 minutes, and I ended up staying the entire hour. And the first few minutes, I guess I was a little nervous. But after that, I was just like I was talking to a friend. And we laughed and cut up, and I told him about being at home one night, and I got a call from Sam Snead, and that's a different story. But I've just had all these golf people, you know, professionals and instructors that have fell in my life. I think it's God blessing me with something he knew I loved, and that's the game of golf. And so Hank and I have ended up being on the show that day. And it's, I mean, it's just been a crazy adventure ever since. That's been 6 years ago. I can't believe it's been that long now to think about it. But my phone started ringing, and I was offered a job writing for the Sporting News. And I said, I'm not a writer. And they said, don't worry about it. We can take care of that. And it's, and then I worked for Hank writing for his website. Gosh, I can't remember all the places I've written. It's not really a career you want if you want to make a lot of money. The media has changed so much in sports. Not many people travel the tour anymore. But I've loved every minute of it. I love it. And especially with COVID this past year, I don't know what I've done without being able to talk to people on Twitter about golf. And to be on a radio show like yours, I do, like you said, I'm amazed that people want me to come on. But I can usually predict the first of the year and before every major, I'm pretty booked up. I've done 40 shows a week at one point in four different countries. I'm pretty popular for whatever reason in Canada and all over the United States, and I've made a lot of great friends. So I'm just having a great time, and that's how I got started. I wasn't trying to be a member of the media. I actually resisted it, but it's like the old saying, when I get out, they drag me back in, so I'm still doing it.
Well, I think golf is better for it, having you out there. I know I love listening to the predictions and what you're seeing in, you know, the future and kind of players that are trending the right way. So this takes us, you know, perfectly into 2021. Like, you know, the season's here. We're starting off in Hawaii. Just, you know, maybe from 5,000 feet, you know, what trend lines are you seeing for the upcoming season? And maybe is there an interesting fact or two going forward that may have, you know, caught your attention from the research that you're doing?
Well, I think the difference, let me back up just a little bit, Jason. It was a dark day in March of last year at the Players' Championship when they completed the first round, and then Jay Monahan announces that they're shutting down not only the tournament, but the PGA Tour. I think that's, and I hate to say this, but that's the day I really realized that this COVID-19 was a really bad thing, a really serious thing. Earlier that day, and I don't know if people know this, Disney World had shut down just up the road from TPC Sawgrass. So that really, I'm not saying Jay wouldn't have shut it down anyway, but I don't think he had a choice. You know, when Disney World closes, that's pretty bad. And so we didn't know. We were left in limbo. And I just thought, well, you know, this thing will last 2 or 3 months. It'll be gone. It was June before we started playing golf again on tour. And it's not been the same. It's not been with fans. It's eventually some tournaments allowed a few fans. But if you watch the Masters with no fans there, you saw a completely different golf course than you've ever seen, I guess. It didn't even look the same. I enjoyed it. I've seen every Masters since I was in my teens. But this one, just there was something missing, and it was the fans, the same people that sit on number 12 every year with their folding chairs. some of them have been coming there for 50 years. They pass down these badges from generation to generation. That's the one thing you can inherit, your season ticket or badges, as they call it, as a patron, not a fan, not a spectator. They call them patrons. And those people were missing. The people, the players knew by name because they're sitting in the same place every year. So it was sort of sad. And while I enjoyed, I really loved seeing DJ win, it showed me again how serious this thing is. So in 2021, I think we've turned the corner in some regards that it won't be a matter of if the tournament's played. I think we'll get in a full schedule unless something else happens that we're not expecting. But it's going to be a week-to-week thing on the fans on whether they'll be there. This week, for instance, they're trying something totally new at the Tournament Champions. They're going to allow fans, but they're not going to be allowed to follow the players. They're going to have a place on the 18th green. I don't know if it stands or what it is. I was on a radio show Saturday in Hawaii, and they didn't know either for sure, but they did say that all the fans will be on number 18. And I think that might be a good idea, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. Maybe some other tournaments that weren't going to have fans say, well, hey, that would work. Let's try that. Because everybody really wants to, you know, do social distancing, and we don't want anybody to get, you know, sick and catch COVID-19. So that's the big story this year. Is every the thing about the PGA Tour, it's a traveling road show. It's not like the NBA or the Major League Baseball where they pick one venue and play all the games from there during COVID. Over 1,000 people are at every tournament, running the tournament, players, caddies, officials, media, volunteers, whatnot. And you play in one town till Sunday, then they're going and they're getting tested before they get on the charter jet to travel to the next place. Then they're tested when they get there. It's a big deal, you know, to go from town to town. But the PGA Tour, and I applaud them and the Commissioner Monahan, to not have any more cases than we've had during this terrible year is remarkable, considering that we're moving so much. So it's a different animal than the other sports. Everybody says, well, it's played outdoors. Yeah, it's outdoors, but you've got to go eat. You've got to travel. And then the testing has not been always accurate. But I think we've got it under control. And this year, and what I was going to say about the states, every state has different regulations. So when you go to California, who knows if we'll play there in 2 or 3 weeks, because they're talking about shutting the whole state down. It's really bad. I think we'll play, but it wouldn't surprise me if that governor out there, if he shuts everything down. So it's really a week-to-week thing based on the state you're in. But right now, we're set to go this week. And then the Sony, they're not going to have fans the second week in Hawaii. So we're taking it week by week. So that's the long-term look at it. As far as players go, I'm going to hitch my horse to the guy that won the Masters, Dustin Johnson. He's number one in the world for a reason. But you have to look at Justin Thomas. He's won this tournament twice in the last 5 years. So he's always a threat, and I could go on and on. We've got 8 out of the top 10 in the world golf ranking that are there. Only people missing are Rory McIlroy and Tyrell Hatton.
Is there a young player that maybe people have not heard of yet that from your research that you're doing of this player is about to have a breakout year on the PGA Tour, in your opinion?
Well, I think he's been heard of. Scottie Scheffler, who won Rookie of the Year last year, I think is going to be a major force. He sort of flew under the radar. I will tell you who I'm really high on this year. He's not a rookie, but he's not been in the limelight for a while due to injury, and that's Daniel Berger. And I hadn't heard a lot of people say much about him, but he was on a medical exemption last year, and he came back in his first event from a really serious wrist problem. And he had dropped to 154th in the world golf rankings. And he won his first event back at Charles Schwab. And last year, he climbed from 154th to 13th in the world golf rankings, just sort of under the radar. Nobody's really talking about him. So So I'm expecting big things out of Daniel. I mean, he was a good player before. I think the injury made him appreciate where he was and what he had. He played in 17 events last year. He made 15 cuts out of 17, 13 top 25s, 7 top 10s, 1 second, and 1 win. He tied for 13th in the PGA and tied for 2nd in the WGC FedEx. So Daniel's somebody I would watch. Again, he is well-known, but he's been out of the limelight for a while, and plus Scottie Scheffler. And then Victor Hovland won the Mayakoba, the last tournament we played before this week. And everybody's been waiting for him to finally break through. And I think that's going to be, he won, and I forget which one it was. He won an off-season or an off-week tournament where you only get 300 FedEx Cup points. It was either the Barracuda or maybe the Puerto Rico. I'm not sure. But it wasn't a full-fledged PGA Tour event. The Mayakoba was. And so I think Victor's going to break through this year as well.
What do you expect from Tiger in 2021? From stats you're studying and what you're seeing?
Well, it wasn't a good year for him last year. And I heard a stat this week, I didn't know, that only 4 people, 45 or over, have ever won on the PGA Tour. And he turned 45 in December. He looks good. I mean, when he played the PNC with his son Charlie, which was, I just loved watching him. I mean, gosh. That kid might put Tiger to shame one day, but he looked healthy. He looked happy. I think Tiger's in a good place mentally, but you know it's the same old story. How long was his back hold up? And it's getting tougher and tougher on him. He said many times in the last couple of years, he said, I can't do the things I used to do. But I wrote him off about 3 years ago. We're talking about Hank. Hank and I both said he's done. I remember when he played in the Hero 1 year, about 3 years ago, he got the chip in the yips.
Yeah, it was ugly.
He shanked a couple, and I was messaging back and forth with Hank, and I said, what do you think? He said, I think he's done. I said, I do too. Then he comes back and wins the Tour Championship. He wins the Masters. I mean, unreal. I mean, just that. I don't know if people realize how big a deal that was. I used to think Jack's win in 86 was unreal. And I think he was 46. But with all Tiger's been through with his injuries, it was just – so I said, from that day on, I'm never going to rule Tiger out. So to answer your question, I would never count him out. But, I don't expect big things from him, but I hope he surprises me. I really do.
Yeah, and when you're talking on your research, you're talking about winning majors after the age of 45, right? That's only four people who have ever won majors past 45 years old.
Yeah, that's correct. I think I said tour, but it's majors, right?
Yeah, the tough part of that is with Tiger, it's like you almost have to have a Hall of Fame career to catch Jack, right? You got to have a Hall of Fame career at 45 plus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 3 majors, you're going to be in the Hall of Fame. Right, to catch him. I think it's such a tough road. And I always wonder too, is his body allow him to practice like he wants to be able to practice? You know,
no,
is that time just limited?
No, it's very limited. I mean, I've read, sometimes when he was out with a back problem, he couldn't even bend over to pick up his son's soccer ball. And then he would tweet that he had been putting. And then he started playing. I forget which injury this was. And Joey, his caddy, was down there in Florida with him a couple times. And he knows that Tiger was always riding in a cart. And he told Tiger, he said, look, you got to start walking. He said, you got to get your golf legs back. And that's been the one thing I have noticed. Tiger didn't seem to walk as gingerly as he used to. And I don't think he does a lot of walking. I think he always plays in a cart when he's at home. So when he comes to a tour, I think he's pretty well spent by the end of the week. His energy level's not near what it used to be.
So Phil Mickelson was hitting bombs. He's trying to get his club head speed up. He's like defining Father Time here. What do you like about his game at this point in his career? And what part of it do you not like as much as it used to be? I mean, his world golf ranking is going down, but he still seems plenty long. Is there any, when you're doing your analysis of Phil, some parts that you think are still really solid? Is there other parts where you're seeing, you know, Father Time slip in there a little bit?
I've never liked Phil going for broke. I mean, he's a gambler. He's, you know, how many U.S. Opens could he have won? And that's the one major that's eluded him. And I don't know if he's even going to get in the U.S. Open this year. But he's hit some miraculous shots. I mean, if you look at that one shot at Augusta about, what, 3 years ago, hit it between two trees. And, I mean, you could sit there one day with 100 balls and not do that. But a lot of times he does it and it doesn't work out. I just wish he would concentrate. I mean, I'm just a fan, you know, I'm not a pro. But I wish he would concentrate on hitting fairways more than the bomb. We talked about that before we went on air.
Mm-hmm.
These guys think fairways are overrated and they'd rather be in the woods with a wedge than in a fairway with a 7 or 6 iron. I just don't like that. I think Phil, now he's got arguably one of the best wedge players that ever played the game, one of the best putters. His putting's on and off. It's not consistent anymore. Still got the wedge play. There's one thing about Phil, he'll never be boring. And you're not going to change him now. So everything I'm saying, if he even heard this, he wouldn't pay any attention to it. He's not going to change. He's won his first two times on the Champions Tour. So when he can't win on the PGA Tour anymore, he's going to go over there and just cash a big check every week. There's no doubt in my mind. He's so – he may be 50, but he's playing like a 35-year-old some weeks. And he's in the best shape of his life. He lost a lot of weight. It's, you know, Phil, it's not about the money. He's just a true diehard competitor. He wants to beat you at ping pong, at cards, at golf, whatever it is. But I do wish he'd try to hit more fairways and just see how that works. But I doubt he'll change. He just he's going to pull out that driver, and if it hits a hospitality tent at the on the last hole of U.S. Open, so be it. I mean, he's done it before, so I don't think he's going to change.
Do you really think he'll go over to the Champions Tour? I always picture – I mean, I know he'd played in a couple events and he won, and it's got to be fun for him to win, but I always picture him, like, not wanting to give up that – the big boy show. You know, there's nothing like the PGA Tour of playing against the younger kids, showing them you still have it. I just picture him, gosh, holding on to it for as long as he can. Or do you think he will get to a point where, all right, finishing T42nd is not as much fun. I'd rather go contend and hold a trophy.
No, I think he'll do both. I don't think he's ready to go over there full time. I mean, he's still going to play 20 events a year on the PGA Tour, maybe more. But if there's an off week or if it's close to home, I don't know how he picked the two he played in the past year. But, I mean, heck, it wasn't even close. He just
– No,
he was
driving greens. And, yeah.
And even Brett Couples said, you know, I don't know. It's just – No, he's not ready to give it up. He's like a lot of guys. You look at Steve Stricker, he's still bouncing back and forth.
Yeah.
And he's still playing well on both of them.
Correct. He had that fall season event. He finished, what, top 15, 14, yeah. Something like that. Yeah, he's still very competitive. Long enough and big guy, hits it a long way. Like, nothing wrong with that golf swing, that's for sure. So
no. So I think he'll go back and forth. We might see him leave the PGA Tour when he's 60. You know, I can see him playing that long. He's never really had any injuries. You know, he battled arthritis, and that seems to be under control. But I don't remember Phil there having a back problem or anything. So
yeah, big body, too. Those seem to last a little bit longer, right? He's a big guy.
Yeah.
And long, fluid swing. It looks like he'd be pretty silky to, you know, at least mid-50s. I could see him being competitive on the PGA Tour still.
Well, a lot of people kid him by his weight, but, you know, I've seen him in person. To me, he never was overweight, but I could see it on TV. But he's definitely slimmed down quite a bit with his coffee, which is now a brand he's promoting, and, along with another trainer. And but no, I think he'll bounce back and forth, and who knows if he'll ever really retire. I just think he loves it so much, loves the competition.
Yeah, and you know what? He could be the oldest guy to ever win a major championship. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility if you catch him on the right week and the right conditions on the right golf course. You know, that'd be kind of a I could see him, you know, wanting that limelight of, I think it was Julius Burrows, 48, I believe, when he won the PGA. So, I mean, I think he's totally capable of doing it in the right circumstances.
Oh, I do, too. I think he could still win. I think he... He said he will not accept an exemption, special exemption for the U.S. Open. So he got lucky this past year. You know, they postponed it till September, and it's normally the top 50, but they extended it to the top 60 because they weren't able to have U.S. Open qualifiers.
Right.
And that's another show. We could spend a whole hour talking about. Normally, there's over 9,000 players that apply to play in the U.S. Open. Amateurs, and they normally, I think, maybe 13 make it. So they weren't able to have the qualifiers, and they assembled the field based on amateur rankings. And they said that the field turned out pretty much like it would have anyway, although there's always some kind of guy that, you know, a local golfer, everybody knows, he might be a fireman or, you know, played in college or something and just has that magical three or four qualifiers where he gets in. That's always a great story to follow. And a lot of the fans that followed me were very upset. As soon as they postponed the U.S. Open, they said, well, you shouldn't call it the U.S. Open because it's not open anymore. And they really take that serious, the part where open means anybody can get in if they can qualify. So the last three or four years, we've had over 9,000 apply. But this year, they didn't do it. So they extended it from the top 50 to the top 60, and that's how Phil got in. I don't know if that'll happen this year. So he needs to get in that top 50 to make sure, because he doesn't have an exempt status any other way, unless they give him an exemption, but he says he won't take it. I'm thinking he might, but, you know, he says he won't.
Change his mind when they throw it at him. Yeah,
I would hope so. I mean, other people have taken it. Some of the names escaped me, but one of the two-time champion, he took it, but he finally ran out of it. And Ernie Els took one. So there's no shame in it. I mean, you've earned the right.
Yeah, especially being at Torrey this year, right? He's from Southern Cal. You know, I could see that, maybe them throwing it that direction at him.
By the way, they've already announced that the Farmers Insurance is not going to have fans, but I'm hoping by the time the U.S. Open's played, that they'll have fans there at Torrey Pines. So they're hosting a PGA Tour event and a U.S. Open in the same year. That's sort of unusual. Normally they'll move the regular tournament to another course. That's what they did at Wells Fargo when they hosted the PGA. They moved the Wells Fargo down to Wilmington, North Carolina, Eagle Point, and then they moved it back to Charlotte the next year. And, of course, Wells Fargo has the President's Cup coming up in 2022, I believe. Not to get off on a tangent, but it just made me think about that.
Well, I'm sorry. Yeah, and I half interrupted you there. I'm sorry about that. But yeah, it shows the quality of the South golf course, how they could, you know, I don't think it's going to take them too much to make that U.S. Open ready, right? I mean, that golf course is pretty much kind of there anyway, so.
Well, they're playing on the other course. There's two courses there, and I'm not sure which is first, the South or North, but it's still a big deal to host something. Those two tournaments in 1 year.
I'm going to ask you, too, on a couple players that are big names and have struggled lately. Continues for Spieth, and then Ricky Fowler's had a tough year. Thoughts on both of those guys, and, you know, from studying their stats, you know, what do they need to do to become top 10, 15 players in the world again from what you're seeing?
Well, I've heard that Jordan has worked with Foley. Then I heard he's working with Butch Harmon, although Cameron McCormick's still his coach. I don't think it's technique as much as it. And I hate to say this, I don't know how to say it in a nice way. I think it's psychological. I think it's in his head. It's like, okay, this young kid came out on the PGA Tour, and just lit it up. I mean, he was a superstar. He was, gosh, I mean, everybody wanted their logo on his bag. And as we were talking earlier, he won the Masters and U.S. Open back-to-back. And when I used to do Hank's show, I'd do it all. I'd always be on there to predict the winner that week. And it seemed like I was predicting Jordan to win every single week. And I tried to find somebody else to pick, but he was just that dominant. I couldn't ignore him. And now you're looking to see if he makes the cut. I feel sorry for the guy. I mean, I hate to say that because he's a multimillionaire. He's gotten married in the last 2 years. He's happy, I guess, off the course, but he is really struggling. When you go up to a ball and you back off as many times as he does, you're not going to hit a good shot because you're not confident. I remember there was one tournament I was at, and I was following, and I could hear Greller say, "Just hit the ball, Jordan. Just get up there and hit it. Do what you just hit it." And that's what I want to say to him. It's almost like he's got the yips, but it's not like the putting yips. But I think it's all in his head. I really do. And I hope he can turn it around because he has got so much talent. Unbelievable putter when he's on. But then he'll have, you know, he just seems to mess it up. And he's just, it's not the Jordan we're used to. Now, as far as Ricky goes, Ricky finished, if I'm not mistaken, a few years ago, he finished in the top five in all the majors 1 year.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's correct. Never won a major. But I'll go back to, and I don't know how many years ago this was. It wasn't long, maybe 3 years ago. When he and Kevin Kisner and Sergio Garcia went to sudden death at the Players' Championship at TPC Sawgrass. Sergio dropped out on number 18, the first playoff hole. Then they went to 17, the water hole. Or is it 16? I can't remember. And he and Kevin both, and Kevin's a great ball striker. That, you know, the Sunday pin placement's always on the front right, just yards away from the railroad ties. And they both just flew it right at the pin. I mean, just like darts. And it became a putting game. And they both made their putts, and then they went back to 18. They came back to 17. I think it was just twice they did that. And Kevin's putt was about 10 feet. They both, you know, covered the flag. They didn't lay up. I mean, they went right at it. And I saw in Ricky's eyes, he was going to win that. And he did. He made his putt. Kevin lipped out. And he won the Players' Championship. To the PGA Tour, that's a major. I mean, they want it to be the fifth major. But it really is. If you look at the field, they say it's the most competitive, strongest field all year, as far as the stats, if you look at it. So I know Ricky can do it. The thing on Ricky, and I've heard other players say this, typically when you finish your round, you go, and if you had a good round, they call you in the media center. If you hadn't, they don't call you. And you go out to the rope line, the autograph line, and sign autographs. Ricky will stand there for over an hour and sign everyone he can. And he doesn't do it because anybody's watching. He's just a great guy. But then the difference is most guys would go to dinner with a caddy or meet some pros where they're renting a house and cook out. Ricky's agent's standing there waiting on Ricky to finish. And they're going to a photo shoot, or they're going to go do a commercial, or an appearance somewhere for sponsors. He is a marketer's dream. He's gotten to the point now he is so famous that even if you don't play golf, you know who Ricky Fowler is. I mean, look at Rocket Mortgage. He's doing commercials without a golf hat on, no orange, sitting on his back porch, and the guy's cutting his hedge, and he looks at Ricky, and Ricky's just in his mind playing golf. And it doesn't mention golf, but he does the hotels, he does Liberty Mutual, Rocket Mortgage, I mean, you name it. And so he's grabbing those millions and millions of dollars. I can't fault him for that, but I think it's hurt his golf game. The guy doesn't really have time to rest or maybe practice. Now, the good thing is he's gotten married, which I think will settle him down. I know he's going to win a major, but it's getting sort of old every year, saying, well, this will be the year, this will be the year. But he has too much talent not to win one. And something's going to click. And when he gets that first one, like a lot of people, there'll be many more to come. He's one of the greatest ambassadors of golf that's ever lived. He's the kind of guy you want your daughter to marry. And a lot of people, when he first came on tour, he and Bubba hung out together. Nothing against Bubba, but, you know, they had the boys band with Hunter Mahan and Ben Crane. And he did a lot of crazy stuff when he was wearing all orange. But people don't know that he and there's a player he's best friends with, and I bet you couldn't guess it if I named 50 players off. But it's not who you would think. He and Jimmy Walker and Jimmy's wife and his wife, they're really good friends. And he's talked about how much advice Jimmy's given him because he's a veteran. That's helped him, you know, on tour on how to do this and how to do that. So I was really happy to see that, to have a mature voice like Jimmy Walker sort of be a mentor to Ricky. So I still think he's going to do well. I'm sure he wants that monkey off his back, but we're just going to have to wait.
Talking about majors, good rotation this year. Obviously, Augusta, you know, coming this spring in April, and you got Kiawah Island, tough golf course. I played it one day when it was really blowing. It was that's a golf course there.
So have I.
Torrey South. Yeah, that one's tough. Torrey South, great golf course. And Royal St. George's for the Open. Kind of these major venues, is there one that really sparks your interest? And then, you know, when you're sort of have been in the prediction business in the past, is there sort of a golf course and a golfer that line up where it's like, yeah, I really like this person at this golf course, and here's why for the upcoming majors we got this season?
Well, as far as Kiawah goes, Rory won the PGA there a few years ago. So I'd have to favorite him. He won in 2012.
And you got to strike your golf ball there, right? I mean, there's
it depends on the wind. I mean, if you're on number 18, you're aiming out in the ocean because the wind's going to blow it to the left no matter what. It all depends on the weather there. Kiel was totally dependent on the weather. The PGA went there in 2012. It had rained about all week. Muddy. It was just terrible conditions. But that's definitely the course I think Rory loved. And he said this. He likes playing in bad weather. So unless Rory has I think he's poised to have a good year. Last year was mediocre for him. It's hard for me to pick between him and DJ as my favorite or top two golfers in the world. I mean, I think they can go back and forth. I still think when Rory's on, when he puts the pedal down, nobody can catch him if he's in the lead. So I would pick Rory right now unless I see something between now and then. The U.S. Open's at Torrey Pines South. And when they had it there last, Tiger won it. In a 19-hole playoff with Rocco Mediate back in 2008. So, you know, could Tiger repeat? I don't know. It just depends on how he feels. Royal St. George, I remember this one great, vividly, because Darren Clark won it in 2011. Yeah. And there's that famous picture of him sitting in the locker room with the trophy in front of him just looking at it. And I remember when he took the trophy back, they asked him, what all had been drank out of that? He said, more things than you want to know. I mean, Darren's openly a big drinker, loves his beer, and he probably got more use out of that claret jug than anybody.
Yeah, you know, I played that golf course too. I don't know if it really favors a certain type of player, right? I mean, I think on that one too, you got to get the right draw with the weather. But there's not on that golf course at St. George's. There's not nothing. There's not a factor of that golf course, at least in my mind, that says it's this type of player, right? That one really favors. I don't know if you feel the same way about Royal St. George's.
Yeah, I'm having trouble remembering the course that much. I mean, I'm assuming it's the links course.
Yeah, it's linksy. It's not overly long. It's, you know, because I think, like, you know, Darren, who hits it pretty long, won there. And then, you know, Norman's won there, hits it long. But who won in 2003? He's not playing the tour anymore. He's a golf coach now.
Ben Curtis.
Ben Curtis one. He's not a long hitter, but a great putter, right? So,
me talking about a one-hit wonder. He was it.
Yeah, you know, what did he win? Two or three times on tour?
I think he did come back to later and won. Yeah,
he didn't really
seem to like the limelight. And I mean, he came out of nowhere. Nobody ever heard of him.
Yeah, not a real long hitter. So that golf course, to me, I think that's truly kind of an open golf course. I don't think it's just going to favor one type of player. As I said, fortunate enough to play it, it's a fantastic track. Like, it demands everything from you. Wasn't the hardest links golf course I played. We played it on a calm day. But I think that's going to be a really interesting open this year to watch and see what kind of, you know, player does it favor. But I can't, you know, the other two, I think, ball strikers, tough golf courses. I don't see that as much at St. George's. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of players contend there a little bit.
No, it's not up there with St. Andrews and some Canoosti and all those. But it's a good course, there's no doubt about it, but they wouldn't be playing there. The great thing is we're having an Open Championship, I hope. You know, it's the only major we didn't have last year. But you never know about Europe. See, that's another thing with the tour. We go to other countries, so we're sort of dependent on what they're going to do. Europe's been hard hit by COVID, but hopefully by June, obviously, you know, the Open's in July. July 15th through the 18th, that we'll be through all this and everybody will have a vaccine. Of course, we got the Masters coming up again in April 8th through the 11th. And as of today, I'm going to stick with Dustin. I mean, unless something happens, I really believe he's going to get his third major this year.
Well, it was dominating. I actually predicted him that week when someone asked me. I just thought it was coming together. He was playing so well, but what an impressive win, you know, to drive it that good, just to see a player of that level on, you know, all eight cylinders.
When he's got that driver doing that little cut, you know, he just gets up there and hits it. He don't even watch it. He just picks up the tee. He knows. I still want Rory to get the career slam, though, at Augusta. I mean, he had that fiasco in, 2010? And it's always going to haunt him if he doesn't. And he can win that. He can win a Masters with his game, but I think that might be psychological. That's a big, big burden to be carrying around.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking, you know, he's already a Hall of Famer, no question about it. But you get to that level where you get all four of them, that's rare air, right? You're talking greatness at a super high level, or I don't know what word I'd want. I mean, you're talking all-timer to get the slam, right?
You know, we've got him and Phil. And then Brooks
Spieth.
I forgot about him.
Spieth's
and then you got Brooks
away from
has
it.
Won. Brooks has won what? Two of the four.
Mm-hmm. Still in his prime, so you got some guys at it. Yeah,
and he won the U.S. Open twice. So, that is a big deal. I hope Jordan can get his too. I forgot about him.
I got to ask your Ryder Cup. That's the last kind of big event of the year. I was looking at the odds. The odds are still, the Americans are still pretty heavily favored at, you know, minus 150. Do you still see the Americans as a favorite up at Whistling Straits? And do you think the venues and the way the captains could set those golf courses up really does favor each home team per se? Do you think it's that big of an advantage?
Oh, definitely. But, And of course, the Ryder Cup's September 22nd. I pray we're done with COVID by then. But if we weren't to have fans, I don't think it would favor the Americans. I mean, that's what makes the Ryder Cup. So hopefully we have fans at the Ryder Cup. I can't imagine not. But I didn't think we'd be talking about COVID this time last year either.
You think it's the fans, or do you think if Captain Stricker can set that golf course up based on analytics from the American team, just like they did sort of in Europe on, you know, the one in France where they narrowed everything up and, you know, made it a straight hitter's paradise, you know, based on the stats from the Europeans, do you think the fans have every bit the influence that the golf course setup can have from the captain? Do you think it's that big of an advantage of fans and that home advantage of we're going to set the golf course based up on how our guys perform?
I think the fans are more important. I mean, look at Poulter. he just sort of comes alive during the Ryder Cup. He's got an incredible record. He's a completely different player during the Ryder Cup, and he credits it to the fans. I mean, if you know, you can fist pump and yell all you want, but the fans aren't there. You just don't do it.
Yeah, good point.
Now, as far as Whistling Straits, I mean, a lot of these guys from the European Tour have played there before. It's not a course they're not used to. It's a tough course regardless. But I would say the fans are the biggest deal, and then the course setup would be right behind it.
I think it's going to be tighter than those odds have it going, though.
If
there's fans
will.
Up there, I think it's going to be really, really close. There's some European players playing very, very well. Their team was, you know, on paper, air quotes, it's always, you know, worse, but they've been so good over the last 20 years. I just don't see the Americans having that big of an advantage.
You've got Dustin, Bryson, JT, Koepka, Morikawa, and Schauffele on the Ryder Cup team for the U.S., the top six. And then right behind them, you got Simpson, Reed, Finau, Wolf, Berger, Cantlay. I mean, we've got a very, very deep team. Oh, yeah. Harris English, who's been coming on, you know, in the wraparound season, he's played great. He's 15th. Tiger's 17th. I guess he'll be a captain's pick. I can't imagine him leaving them off. Kuchar, Ryan Palmer, and Bubba Watson's 20th. So, yeah, they're all lined up. I think they should be favored. But like you, when the Ryder Cup, to me, the Ryder Cup's one of those events you can throw out all the stats, you can throw out all the rankings, throw out all the odds. It's just a matter of what happens. I mean, how many Ryder Cups have you watched, Jason, where you haven't been shocked? You know, whether the Europeans had a 4-0 lead or we had a big lead, and it all evaporates on Sunday afternoon. It's just, that's why we love the Ryder Cup so much.
Yeah, I mean, usually, you know, I think the one in, what, the last one was kind of, I had a gut feeling, it was sort of predictable, and it really never turned into much. But normally, just the players are also equally good, right? Even if Europe gets up to a big lead on a, let's say, on a Friday, right? By Saturday, you know, afternoon, it starts to tighten, right? No, the teams are so equal that very rarely is it, okay, this thing's over halfway through it. And there's ebbs and flows, and it usually, you know, there's a reason why we're all watching on Sunday, because it comes down to that. And that's why it's such a great and special event. And I think it's going to be close. But like I said, I think it's going to be, like exactly what you're saying, that throw the stats out, it's both teams, most people seem to, under the gun, play very, very well. Even though the pressure is immense, you see a lot more great golf than you do guys falling apart and rising to the occasion. So I expect nothing less from this go-around.
I mean, there's a reason these guys go, you know, playing it every 2 years for free. They don't make anything. But it's, you know, it's part of being in the Hall of Fame to me. One thing you look at is how many majors the player, how many wins does the player have, how many majors, how many Ryder Cups do you play on. That's the top three things I look at in a player. So the Ryder Cup's a big deal.
I agree, right? And if you make a team too, it's sort of like, what, an extra couple PGA Tour wins? I mean, when I have guests on who are, you know, former Ryder Cup players or participants, it's in the introduction. Right, mm-hmm. The four-time PGA Tour winner and Ryder Cup member, it's a special thing, and I think, like I said, I love seeing the level of play when on both sides when they, you know, like I always think of like Paul McGinley, right? Like he was a very solid, good European Tour player, great career, longevity, all of it. He turned into Superman for the Ryder Cup every damn 2 years as an American. It's like, oh no, God, not Paul McGinley again, right? And he would just go out and win his matches, and he was just like, I don't know what happened, but he turned into Tiger Woods every couple years. You know, great career. Longevity was there, but he was a different beast in Ryder Cup. It seems like it brings that out in players, which I love seeing.
I still don't, and to your point, you're exactly right. I don't understand it, but it seems like the European Tour players or the European team, they get up for the Ryder Cup more than the United States. And I'm not throwing the United States player on the bus. I know they want it, but there's something about, it's not skill. it's attitude. You know, so many years we've lost and we just look at our roster and say, well, we shouldn't have lost that.
Right.
And it's just those European players, they seem to play together better as a team. I think they come into it and somebody preaches to them and say, well, they've written you guys off, you're the underdogs, and that motivates them. And they usually are the underdogs if you look on paper. But that's why it just seems like that week you can throw all the past stats and predictions away, and it's just they're rising to the occasion and rising above their normal playing level. It's still amazing to me how they do it. I don't know what it is, but they've got something special on European Marauder Cup team that we need to try to figure out what it is and pass it around.
Yeah, I've talked to some of the guys in the podcast who are European Tour players, and to me, it just seems like there is more togetherness throughout the season. Like just even playing the European Tour, they had a tendency just from talking to guys of staying at the same hotel and grabbing dinner together, and you know, you put the two Spaniards together or the guys from Ireland together, and magic happens, right? It just seems like there's a little bit more cohesiveness to their unit. If that makes sense, it's the best way I can, just from my, whatever, 100 podcasts I've done, from talking to quite a few of the guys, that just seems like there's this sort of unity with them. It's not, you don't have to say like, let's get together on this and come, you know, make this unit as one. It's like it's naturally kind of, or it's easier for them to get there. It just seems like. That's sort of my take from talking to it.
And, you know, this year on the European Tour, their schedule is 42 events in 24 different countries. I mean, can you imagine the travel? And I think that's where a lot of the bond comes from. They're going together and rent a charter, you know, Wheels Up or NetJets or whatever. I'm sure some of them fly commercial, but a lot of them fly private. So it's the travel and renting houses together. They spend a lot more time together, I think.
Yes.
And it's a smaller group of people. They don't have as many players on the European Tour. Now, this is another subject, but, you know, the PGA Tour has went in and now has an alliance with the European Tour.
Uh-huh.
And actually owns a percentage of it. I heard it's 10% because they were in danger of going bankrupt. So we'll see how that affects the two teams. I don't know if it will this Ryder Cup, but you're going to see a lot of what I've been told. Eventually, if you win an event on the European Tour, you will be exempt on the PGA Tour, a two-year exemption, and that is huge. That's not the case now. You can win five tournaments on the European Tour and still not have your PGA Tour card. But I see that maybe not this year, but next year they will announce that a win on either tour will exempt you on the other tour.
Well, that's a game changer then, right?
Yeah.
Because just to be able to plan your schedule and do it, it's you're going to see a better field in the Scandinavian Masters if that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in all fairness to the European Tour, I think they do an incredible job. Their marketing, some of the things they've tried are awesome. I think they have the best website in professional golf. I mean, that's not a big deal, but it is to someone like me who researches stuff and follows it. And awesome golf. I mean, just incredible golf. You and I were talking earlier, and I'm not on here to get any sympathy, but I've been fighting cancer for 3 years. And when I had cancer surgery, one thing that happened to me, I developed insomnia. I sleep crazy hours, and I'm up sometimes at 3 or 4 in the morning watching the European Tour. And, I mean, those guys are incredible players, but some of them just can't, you know, like Brooks Koepka played on the tour for two or 3 years before he got his PGA Tour card. His brother's doing that now, Chase. So I think it's a great thing. What I'm hearing is eventually, and I hope this doesn't hurt anybody listening from Europe, but eventually the European Tour is going to become part of the PGA Tour. It's going to be PGA Tour Europe, PGA Tour Asia, which is already there, Latin America. I mean, they've got the money. They've got the marquee players. And I think that's where we're headed. That's what I'm hearing. They already own 10% of the European Tour. They're propping them up so they don't have to worry about paying purses. And they have a great schedule this year, 42 events. That's huge. So they're sort of like where the LPGA was years ago, but they've turned the corner. So,
well, it makes sense to work together, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It just does. It's just to put the pieces of the puzzle together. You know, they're both great products. Like I was always thankful it was on early Saturday and Sunday morning because when my kids were really little, they're still
yeah.
around, but when they were 2 and 3, my wife would sleep in. I'd get up with the little guy at, you know, they're up early at 6. I
been
actually had a funny
that.
Story. So we would watch with, you know, Jackie and I would watch the European Tour, and Jack was 2 or 3 years old. So when I took him to the first PGA Tour event he went to, he was maybe 4 or 5. And fortunate enough that we can go on the driving range, you know, on a Wednesday and say hello to some of the pros that I know, and Jack gets to meet him and stuff. So we asked, you know, if we're going out there, and Jack wants to know, where's Francesco Molinari? Now, this is before he was playing over here full time. That's a different tour, Jackie. You know, where's Big Henrik? So Jack
Francesco?
Was completely confused. Oh, yeah, because all he watched in the morning with me was European Tour.
How
so Jack thought, you know, at 4 years old, we were going to a tour event, and he had watched and liked all of these European Tour players. So he was a little disappointed when I had to tell him all of his guys he used to watch on the mornings with me, you know, Lee Westwood's not going to be out there. So my little guy, the first time he got to meet, you know, a bunch of, you know, he loved it once he got out there, but he was completely baffled. He thought we were going to a European Tour event because when he was a little guy, he'd grab him his bottle and put him with Dad on the couch, and he watched, you know, he used to watch golf with me. So I was very grateful when the kids were little that the European Tour was on in the mornings because you could go, you know, watch the Portugal Masters with your kid, and you know, he was happy, but yeah, it was funny. He had no concept that there was two tours in the world. He figured, well, if these guys are on TV, I watch it in the morning, I would like to meet Henrik Stenson. So Jackie was a little disappointed when Henrik wasn't out there. I'm like, cross the pond, but, you know, maybe someday we'll meet him. So it's a great product. I love watching it too, right? So it makes sense if they work together.
Four years old, that's amazing.
Oh, yeah, his favorite player ever, Francesco Molinari, is still his guy. And because he liked watching Francesco Molinari when he was a little guy and watching European Tour. So that's still his guy. He still likes Francesco a lot. So.
Wow.
And he's 11 now. So yeah, he likes the European Tour. He liked watching those guys. And if it's still on, he recognizes more of those guys, you know, than the PGA Tour. Because we, like I said, it's always on at our house in the morning, and he'll sit and watch it with me still a little bit. So.
That's
awesome. I got one last. Yeah, it's great, and I love the product, and I love what they're doing. So it's been in our house for years, that's for sure. And like I said, my kids kind of grew up on it in the mornings.
Well, there's no way that the PGA Tour was going to let them go under, and I'm really proud of Jay Monahan. I mean, I love the guy. I think he's done a phenomenal job with COVID, and. He listens to the players, the players' council, and I just think they're headed in the right direction. So, and I love the European Tour players. And another thing I want to say real quick, it looks like Lee Westwood is on the way to making the Ryder Cup this year. So,
yeah,
he's got a great resurgence. What is he, 47, I think?
He's my age, yeah, and he's playing great, and he has been. It's been pretty solid the last couple of years. He's going to be on it again, and he's earned his way on it.
Exactly. He looks so happy. You know, Lee never smiled a lot, but the last couple – last year especially, he's smiling all the time. So he's in a good place, and I'm happy for him. I've always loved Lee. I wish he would get that one major, though. It's just –
Yeah, he's been such a great player for so long. That's when he's close, that's who I'm always pulling for. But he looks at, you know, I wonder at this stage of his career if he knows he's sort of beaten the odds, right? Like to still be playing this good after all those years on his body and still to be, you know, number one in Europe. And I mean, still world class at pushing 50 is amazing. It shows how hard he has to be working. You know, there's no way you can kind of half-ass it at 47 and compete against 25-year-olds.
I think there's intimidation factor for these European players coming over here and playing in majors. I mean, look at Colin Montgomery. I mean, he's cleaning up on the Champions Tour, but he never won here. I don't think he ever won a major, did he?
No.
And Lee
never
Westwood. So there's something about flying over here that gets to these guys, but when they're over there, they're awesome.
Yeah, and he's like, I agree with you. It looks like he's playing with joy. Like, just he was, you know, you could tell he was so excited to win that tournament and finish number one in Europe. And, I was talking to Sandy Armour, who's Tommy Armour III's brother, and I had him on the podcast one time. And I said, you know, how did TA play so well in his 40s? And he said, Jason, behind the scenes, the work you have to put in your 40s, you know, especially mid 40 and on, to still be competitive and to still play really, really well. He's like, there's no way you can just sort of use your talent and glide through it at that point. The competition's too good. So it's a ton of work. And he said, Tom did the work to still play that well, you know, up to 50 when he was fully exempt on the PGA Tour. And so I have to imagine it's satisfying for Lee, because that hard work he's got to be putting in to still be this good at this point is paying off. And he's winning golf tournaments, and he's being competitive. It has to be extremely rewarding. That's my sense of watching him, is all of this effort is paying off. And he looks quite pleased that it's all still coming together at this stage of his career. Because, like I said, there's no way he can be, you know, sort of all in. He's got to be all in working at it at this point to be this good at that age. He's a hell of a player.
Tommy's fun to watch. Is he playing the Champions Tour at all now?
Yeah, well, he didn't play too much this year. He's got a rib injury that has been holding him back, but... You know, it's an interesting, you know, conversation. How do you play that well in your late 40s, which Lee's doing? And like I said, Sandy had some really good insights. And first off, he said it's just a massive amount of work. You have to put the work in the gym, take care of yourself, early nights, practice, practice, practice. There's no way around it in your 40s. You can get away with it at 28, can't get away with it at 46.
Tommy, that was sort reminds, of or Pat Perez reminds me of Tommy Armour III. They almost look alike somewhat with their long back, hair in the back, and their attitude. They sort of have that walk about them. I mean, Tommy Armour looks cool no matter what he's shooting. he's got that look about him. I love to watch him. I hope he'll play more on the Champions Tour.
Yeah, and like Pat Perez, you think about it, right? I mean, he's been just, you know, he's got, I think, 3 wins, but he's never lost his card. For 20-some years. I mean, that's a level of greatness. Just to be that consistent, no matter what kid comes out of LSU or Alabama or over from Europe, won't take your card. You're
Pat,
that good. You're in, you're out.
Pat plays with a chip on his shoulder. You know, one thing that motivated him more than another, and I think it was Callaway, but he had a company, you know, didn't renew their contract. And really hurt him. And then Bob Parsons, who owns PXG, reached out to him. And now he's a diehard PXG, and he and Bob are really tight. You know, Bob Parsons is a character. I'm sure you know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
Started GoDaddy, and Pat was motivated to play better, and he did after he had that injury. He was out for a whole year because of what I'm pretty sure it was Callaway just said, no, we don't need you anymore. And he said it really hurt his feelings. And here's Bob Parsons reaching out to PXG. So that's his motivation. He's one of those type of people. Well, I'll show you. And I've always pull for Pat. I listen to his radio show on PGA Tour Radio Network each week with Michael Collins. They're really good.
But yeah, he's a character, right?
He
wears his heart
open.
On his sleeve. Yeah, yeah. That's why, you know, I think it's good for golf. I love Pat Perez. You know, like if he's in contention, I'm watching TV to see what he's going to do. Right? He's a hell of a player. You can't be that good for that long without having.
But then when he 3-putts a green, that ball's going in the water. I mean,
that's what you love about him, right?
Yeah,
that's
I do.
Because I want to see him kind of.
They need more Pat Perez
characters.
Yeah,
I want to see a guy have a half explosion every now and then. I get it, right? Terrell Hatton's great from that. I love guys with character. You know, like you said, TA3 always looked like the coolest guy out there, right? Like, I love these characters that the game has. I think it's more fun when they're out there. You know, Stadler was always great to watch. You know, is he going to blow his? Yeah, right. I mean, I love those kind of.
Kevin's just like his dad. Kevin's just like him. Of course, Kevin's not been playing much lately, but him and. I was listening to a show one night. Kevin was on, and his dad called in. And his dad said, "Where are you?" He said, "I'm in Kansas or something." He said, "What the hell are you doing there?" He said, "I'm playing in some little tournament." He said, "Okay." I mean, it was just, they're just alike.
Yeah,
you know,
characters,
Thad is
right.
So nice on the radio. But he had a temper on tour. He was, I mean, you knew how he felt. There's no doubt about it.
Correct.
Well, you know, I know you're winding up, but there's one thing two things we haven't mentioned. One's the Olympics coming up next year, or this year, in Tokyo. Of course, they were postponed from last year. Now, the deal is, they've already said, the Olympic Committee, if they're not able to play this year, they're going to cancel this Summer Olympics. It's just going to be canceled. They're not going to try to reschedule it. But it's in July 23rd. The first year, 4 years ago, or 5 years ago now, when they had the golf in the first Olympics in Rio, if you'll remember, nobody wanted to go over there.
Because
of this mosquito that was flying around with this virus. Turns out not to be a big deal. Gil Hans goes over there for 2 years and builds an incredible golf course. And what happens when they leave after Justin Rose gets the gold medal? They don't open it. I mean, I don't know if they open it to the public. Nobody played it. And now it's
right.
Just, it's a field of grass. You can't even tell it's a golf course. It's such a shame. I mean, it's incredible that they put that much effort into it. But Tokyo, I think we'll see a whole different venue as far as the course goes. And I think you'll see more players trying to make the Olympic team than last time. I hope they get it in.
It seems like that gold medal that, you know, Justin Rose had was a pretty damn big deal.
It
and I
was.
Think you're going to see more players wanting
Kuchar.
That.
You know, Kuchar still carries that medal in his pocket in a sock. He carries it everywhere he goes. If you ask him, he'll pull it out of a tournament and show it to you. I don't remember if it's silver or bronze, but he carries it with it all the time.
He got bronze. I think Stenson got the silver, right?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, him, the Iceman, right.
Yeah, but just a medal in the Olympics, to be an Olympian, like, how cool is that, right? Just to say you played in one, let alone get a medal in it.
Okay, you're young, much younger than I am. And my generation, to get an Olympic medal was like, okay, you're set for life. But the millennials, and maybe some a little bit older, the Olympics, and I fought TV coverage. It's not covered on TV like it was. I remember back in, when I was growing up, the Olympics, I mean, you didn't watch anything for 2 weeks but the Olympics at night. But now it's sort of an afterthought. Well, I'll flip it over here and watch the Summer Olympics, you know. And, it's just lost its luster for some reason. But it was a big deal.
Well, don't you think it was different, too, when there was three networks and now there's 280, so it's not going to have the same, probably the demographic pull it once had, I'd have to imagine.
Yeah, it's I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I love it. We got a full year this year. And like I said, I think it's not going to be a matter of if they play. It's just going to be a matter of whether fans or not. So that's a good thing. And we lost, you know, we had 13 tournaments that didn't get played last year. I may have already mentioned that. But I don't think we'll have any cancellations this year.
Well, I got two final questions that are pretty straightforward. And I'd love your opinion on it. Who is the most underrated player on the PGA Tour, in your opinion, where that player just does not get the props they deserve of how truly good they are? And then my last one is, who finishes number one at the end of 2021 in the official world rankings, in your opinion?
Oh, wow. The first question's tough. He's a journeyman. Well, he's not a journeyman. He's a solid, I don't play fantasy. I just realize it's like buying lottery tickets. I mean, these guys, they'll have 200 teams in a match, and I don't know how they do that, but I admire Charles Howell III. I mean, the guy has made, last I heard, like $50 million. I think he's won three times, but he makes the cut almost every single week. He's not going to go out and win the Masters probably. He might. But if there's a guy you can depend on to be there every Sunday playing, it's Charles Howell. I've just always been a big fan of his. And he's one of the most likable guys on tour. he's not a big secret. I mean, his fellow players know he's always going to be in the hunt. But I think he's more of a guy that this is his job. And he makes a lot of money in it. But he's not real famous. He could probably go into any golf shop and half people wouldn't know who he was. But the other players know who he is. So that would be my answer on him. As far as who's going to be the number one golfer, I look at the world rankings right now and DJ's at the top. I can't see, unless John Rahm has a great year or Justin Thomas, I just don't think DJ's going back up. So I'm going to stick with Dustin Johnson, still be number one at the end of the year.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Yeah, and it's, you know, we talked a little bit beforehand, which we referenced, and to get to know you a little bit better. But it's truly an honor to have you on, and I love listening to your commentary when you're on other podcasts. So thanks for taking the time to do this with us today, and I would love to have you on again at some other point when there's some really cool stuff we can kind of talk about and get deep in the weeds on different players and what they're doing. But I truly enjoy the time, so thank you so much for doing it.
Jason, thank you. I do a lot of shows, and I love being on all of them, but there are some shows that the host is not as golf knowledgeable as you are, and it's been a pleasure talking to someone who knows the game as good as you do. So thank you for having me on.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks again.
Thank you, bud.